the Haunted Backroads of America, and live from the G&D Show Studios, this is your Ghost Man and Demon Hunter Show.
Doesn't that sound exciting to you?
Welcome back, Shadow Nation, to the one, the only, mystifying Oracle Radio, your Ghost Man and Demon Hunter Show. Demon Hunter!
I just can't move too much Christmas food.
Yes, Christmas, as the rain falls outside like early April. Hey, special thanks to all our homes, all our sponsors, Stitcher, Smart Radio, Planet Paranormal, Action Audio Apps. Are you guys listening? They want to know? Check them out, actionaudioapps.com. The SYL Project, tis the season, guys, but you can give all year long. Share some love, give some love. TheSYLProject.com. Guys, go check them out today. And welcome back to studio.
The studio.
Hope everybody had a Merry Christmas in the Shadow Nation. Yeah.
I had a Merry Christmas.
Did you really?
I did.
Now, this is late breaking news. Of course, people that follow you on Facebook might have already known this, but you seen something weird in the sky the other night.
I did.
Oh, my God. Do tell. This is a conspiracy paranormal type show.
This is. And you know, Sean, my tradition, having been on the road for so many years, either working strange jobs in between acting gigs or going out and trying to get a gig here or there.
Gigs.
Being, you know, working in radio, and the radio never sleeps, ladies and gentlemen, you know, it never sleeps.
No, but we do. That's why I've been off last 2 weeks.
you may get Christmas Day off, but you're working Christmas Eve until 3 a.m. or midnight. It became my tradition over the years to stop wherever I was doing, if I was driving down the highway or whatever, pull over, walk outside, and look up at the night sky and see if Santa Claus is flying over at midnight.
Or the Millennium Falcon. Falcon.
Or the Millennium Falcon, sure, why not?
Falcon.
Well, this Christmas, it was especially nice because there was a full moon. And with the beautiful weather, I could step outside and in my, you know, pajamas. Didn't need to wrap myself up in a parka like I usually do.
Right.
I walked out and there was the beautiful full moon. And I snapped a picture of it because I was like, oh, you know, look at that beautiful moon. And
yeah.
As I looked at the picture, I realized there was a little red dot in the picture. It wasn't a star. And I looked up and I saw that, you know, it was moving. So I snapped another picture and another picture. And sure enough, it's moving across the night sky, this little red dot right next to the moon.
Wow.
And then at 12:01, I looked back up and it was gone.
Wow. 12:01, right at midnight.
Yep.
Yeah. That's so.
I saw Santa flying over.
So do you believe now?
I always believe, Sean. I always believed in Santa. I mean, people say that to me all the time. Do you believe in Santa? I say, I hunt ghosts.
Yes, absolutely.
Of course I believe in Santa.
I believe in the Krampus.
I'm ready for Santa.
You think that a few hundred million kids all over the world wishing and hoping couldn't bring something like Santa to life
or
keep him alive?
Six.
Right, you know.
Yeah, I believe in Santa.
I do too.
Come on, everybody, we believe in Santa.
Did you get any Christmas love?
Nah.
Exactly. Anyway, me either. The Krampus is, people are going crazy right now, huh? It feels weird because we've talked about this for years.
Years, ever since I saw my first Krampus Loft,
yeah.
Krampus run, and I wanted to
bring it
to America.
You told me about it. I didn't know about the Krampus.
And I wanted to bring it to America. And apparently Pepsi and Coca-Cola, they won't sponsor a Krampus run.
I don't understand this. Yeah.
They don't want to scare little kids the week before Christmas, I guess.
Yeah, I don't understand because Krampus
Marcia,
is...
Marcia!
Yeah, Krampus is the coolest thing. I mean, you know, baby Jesus and Santa Claus and all that, of course, is the reason for the season. Yay, I get that. But only in America... I think we're the only, because there were some other ones I was looking up. Oh my God, let me go to the charts here. There, people were sending me stuff in, Nathan. Not only is there the Krampus, my dear friend. No.
Can I try and guess one of them?
Hold on. I didn't get them all. Do you have a list up in front of you?
I don't. But I know Black Pete in Spain is their version of the Krampus, and he's Santa Claus's right-hand man.
Okay.
And when Santa rewards the good little boys and girls, Black Pete comes in and punishes the bad little boys and girls.
Black Pete. Okay. All right. Well, hold on a second here. Maybe I can bring up, because I was bringing it up, and I'm fascinated, because think of the movie ideas. Move over, Michael Dougherty. Nathan and Sean Productions, Ghost and Demon Productions are coming through, buddy. Let's see if I can pull up here something else. Tell us more about the Krampus, though.
Oh, the Krampus, a goat-headed demon that travels prior to Christmas. You know, he goes through, and his job is to drag chains and birch sticks. And if you've been bad, he comes in it and gives you a beating for your trouble. And if you were really bad, he'll stuff you in his sack and drag you down to the river and drown you.
Ooh.
That's the way to teach children to be good.
He doesn't drag you to a river bottom. I never heard that. I heard he drags you to hell.
Well, he drags you to a river bottom. That's a movie, Drag You to Hell.
All right. Well, here, let me...
He'll drown little kids who are bad. I mean, that's an important lesson to learn. Be good or you wind up at the bottom of the river.
This is crap.
How many times have you threatened your kids with that?
Well, today?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you got to your parenting skills have got to be up to par here. But I really want to talk about this one, and I can't get Facebook to come up for some reason. Oh, here we go. And I posted it this week, and you're really going to like this because, you know, you told me... We announced it to the world, mostly, about Krampus.
Krampus. Well, we kind of helped bring it back to life here in the U.S.
We did. Because I seen some people posting, they talked about this cool thing on some radio show, and it was called the Krampus. You know, we didn't know anything about it, and now this cool movie's out. And somebody replied, Sean and Nathan on the Ghost Man Demon Hour show talked about that years ago. So thanks for having our back, guys. That's definitely
true. People always try and forget that we were there.
They did forget.
Somebody comes out and says, first underwater investigation. Nope, that was us, folks. Yeah. That was us.
That was us. That was on the that was on the show we did.
Let's first paranormal blood ritual. Right here, heard around the world.
Okay, here it was. but it's actually just a picture. I didn't put the story up there. Here we go. Grýla from Iceland. Have you heard about this?
Grýla?
Grýla, G-R-Y-L-A. So not only is the Krampus a monster during the holidays, but in this picture, it has a big, and this is in the hills of Iceland, or the mountains, I'm sorry, and it has a big statue of this ogress with these big boobies, and they're sagging, she's got horns, and she's real ugly, and the kids are in a pot. Well, apparently, it says here, you know, children pose next to the statue of the ogress. Ogress? That each children during Christmas Eve for being bad. It seems every country has something to punish the bad except ours.
There you go.
Yeah, but apparently she roams around the night before and she makes a stew of children. Huh?
That gives whole new meaning to how you doing? I'm in a stew.
Yeah, but it's so funny the stuff that we don't know about. You know. Like
well,
those protect, monster legends.
We protect kids too much in this state, John. It's too gentrified. It's too, purified. It's too, I don't know.
Neglified. Hey, have you heard the greatest Christmas gift this year to get came in as, go ahead, what do you guess? What was the best Christmas gift for kids?
The little droid from Star Wars.
Oh, that was close, although I did get Sissy one. Very cool. I've been playing with it more than she has. But the hoverboards.
Oh, God.
People are losing their minds. Have you seen these?
They don't really hover, folks. And there's pictures all over. The number one picture I see of these are people falling off of them.
Yeah, on their backside. But somebody told me they had no rules on them. And now, since right after Christmas, the lawmakers are passing these rules that now a kid must be 16 or older and they restricted use of the thing to backyards, trails for like bikes, stuff like that, because apparently the kids are thinking it's groovy to be on the interstate with these things or something. Yeah, I mean, people lost their mind over them. You know, they're going for about $800 name brand.
And there's no warranty on them.
I didn't know about that.
Yeah, and they catch on fire when you plug them in and charge them.
Well, apparently, I don't know what the name is of the main hoverboard. Maybe it's just hoverboard. But, yeah, I've read these stories everywhere of these things catching on fire, which, I mean, what, do they just explode and the fire rises from your feet?
The battery overheats, I guess, because every story I've heard about it is while they're charging. But the airlines, I've noticed, Sean, are restricting them. You're not allowed to bring them on planes.
Yeah, because the lithium ion, probably, that they have, same batteries as the computer. Despite hoverboards being responsible for too many near-death experiences, Nathan, people are still having their way with them. Literally. What do you think about that?
Literally having their way with them?
Mm-hmm.
That sounds a bit messy.
Well, we'll get into that with our little news tonight. But how about tonight's guest?
Who would that be, Sean?
Oh.
There we go.
You hear it. You hear the music, guys. The music you've come to know from the show we all love, The Walking Dead. Tonight's guest, he is an actor best known for his role of Axel on the AMC smash hit The Walking Dead. Known by most in Hollywood as the Chameleon for his ability to take any character and make it his own. His resume includes The Devil's Rejects, The Lone Ranger, Domino, much, much more. He also was a heavy batter for the Seattle Mariners, Houston Astros, All-American boy from Texas.
Texas, you know, when I met him, he looked like an All-American boy from Texas.
Yeah, he does. And I guess apparently he's been in a bunch of stuff. Great actor, great guy. He's going to stop by studio to wrap things up, to chat it away with Sean and Nathan, your bad boys of shadow. Tonight, guys, guest is Lou Temple, Axel from The Walking Dead. He's going to tell us all about it behind the scenes. What's it like on set? He's going to join the honorary shelf of all the walking guests we've had on in the past, huh?
Yes, and, you know, it's nice, Sean, because we don't have to worry about him coming on and then getting killed off the show.
This is true. I believe now we've had more Walking Dead guests on this show than The Talking Dead has. Nah, I'm kidding. We got better time. Better time slot now.
Yeah. It's we're just before The Walking Dead. He has to come on out.
Anyway, guys, our good friend tonight, actor Lou Temple, Axel from the AMC smash hit The Walking Dead, stops by studio only at the home of the Mystifying Oracle Radio. That's right here, guys, your Ghostman and Demon Hunter show.
Woo-hoo.
I can't wait. I cannot wait.
It's always fun to have a cast member from the show who we get to meet. And we hang, you know, I got to meet him and hang out with him at Walker Stalker. And I said, hey, you know, by the way, I've got this show.
Yeah. He was super cool, too, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, he was probably even more cool than, I mean, it was nice to go over and speak with, you know, people that we've been on the show with or had on the show. But he's warm. He's friendly. He brings you right in. He wants to be a part of your life. And, you know, I don't think he's the one who's been driving by my house, you know, late at night,
sure?
Shining my window. But
if he is, then
I'll have to get a restraining order.
He wants to
He's really cool.
He wants to play zombie apocalypse with you.
Are you ready for the zombie apocalypse?
I don't know. I might be.
I've been looking at a lot of this stuff about zombie apocalypse, Sean, and I've always said that I'd be the survivor, but I'm starting to think I wouldn't.
Oh, I knew that. I told you, actually, at the beginning. Your first mistake is you want to go to the mountains. You know. Well, everybody wants to go to the mountains during a zombie apocalypse, and of course we'll have to ask Axel about it again today. But the thing about that is everybody will do this because everybody will be trying to go to the mountains, plus the zombie outbreak. When somebody comes up and tries to bite you, so how are you going to go, okay, everybody get in the car, let's go?
Well, I still think I'd last longer than you, Sean.
Yeah. Well, when you figure that out, hopefully it's sooner than later. Just come over to my house, and I'll let you stay up there. What do you think?
I think I'll last longer than you, and it won't be a zombie that'll take me out. It'll be an asthma attack. So.
I don't know. Hey, nobody's big boned, Nathan. Did you know about that?
Nobody's big boned?
Nobody is big boned. You're either fat or you're not. That's what they say. Nobody's big boned. I just heard that today. Because you've always heard, well, I'm not fat, I'm big boned.
Yeah, I have heard that. I have heard that. But I've always been told, you know, in science class in like the fifth grade, that everybody's bones are the same. Nobody's big boned. I remember a teacher telling me that.
I don't believe that, though. Look at Andre the Giant. Have you seen his bone structure?
Well, he was, you know, abnormal.
Ah, see, I stumped you there. I stopped.
His girth of his bone matched his height. And in fact, I don't think it was even enough for his height and weight because he had such horrible back and muscle problems.
Yeah. I was reading this story. I get a lot of cool stories off our friends from Disclose.tv, Truth Revealed, guys. Check it out on Facebook and stuff. I get some really cool stories off of their page, but this one, and I know it's not really news. I just want the topic of discussion here. Best piece of UFO evidence for 2015, filmed by astronaut as Tim Peake docked with ISS, the International Space Station. Did you see this, Nathan?
I did not.
Yeah. And it's asking the questions. Were aliens actually buzzing around the ISS, International Space Station, as British astronaut Tim Peake docked? He says yes.
Really?
Yeah, you can look up the footage. Just look up Tim Peake ISS footage on YouTube or whatever. It caused a storm of media, apparently, when it was uploaded to YouTube. It was put on YouTube by a Mr. Enigma entitled UFOs Seen Everywhere During Soyuz Docking on NASA. Ustream. You know how they show that stuff, you know, live.
No, how do they do that?
Yeah, you never seen how they have that NASA television? Half the time it's it's like blacked out, but then when they do something cool like that, like when the Mars rover pictures or images were coming back, they did stuff.
I remember that. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Well, I guess they showed it on there and somebody taped it and put it up. I guess that's how they got it. I don't think it was old Tim.
You don't think so?
Tim Peake. I don't think they would be... I wonder what the policy is there on media restrictions. Like at my job, you know, you got to watch social media. You know what I mean? Everything's social media. Watch what you post. Everybody's watching. Yeah, it's called America, folks. Rights of privacy.
Well, you've posted on social media. It's no longer private.
Oh, that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. No, anything short of I have 17 people in my basement and I'm putting them in a stew and eating their carcasses.
Are you a troll from...
Grilla.
Are you Grilla?
No, I'm not. Anyway, getting back to the ISS before my ADD kicks in. They say it's the best piece of UFO evidence. Yeah, I know. I'm running around with the best piece of UFO evidence for 2015. Dozens of UFOs can be seen in the background. Dozens, Nathan.
Really?
Can be seen in the background while he's docking.
I don't believe it.
While he's docking with the space station. Some zipping off in the distance, others gently floating by, and even one gigantic donut-shaped UFO that seems to inspect the event.
Don't they usually write that off as ice from the side of the...
They always seem to say something. Well, that was a thing from Russia that was launched in 1923 that just now entered our atmosphere. How would we know? How would we know?
You just have to trust the government, Sean.
You do. You have to trust. I can no longer, what's that one guy's name? DeGrassi, the black gentleman that's really smart. And Neil DeGrassi, is that what you say?
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah. I think that's how you pronounce his name. I can no longer trust him, Nathan.
No.
I used to think him and Bill Nye were so intelligent. I can no longer trust Neil. And I'll tell you why. He has chosen. I'm sorry. Check that out. Not Neil. But Bill Nye.
Bill Nye, you no longer trust?
I really like Bill Nye, the science guy. But he came out and made a public statement that has me outraged.
And what's this?
Enraged. The statement was that he prefers Star Trek over Star Wars.
Oh, good man.
And
good
he
man.
Says it's because, you know, Star Trek's more scientific, whereas the Star Wars saga is, you know, like religion, good and bad, and the Force, and a lot of things that are...
Bill Nye, not a real religious guy.
Mm-mm. He's definitely made it. I think he's going to have his first primetime show called Everything Against Religion and Science Based, which I understand. He's went to these religious museums and stuff where he's made these big, big statements and well-thought-out statements about what's going on, and the religious people have returned and saying, well, it's because the Bible says so. That's how you counter that. That's how
that's called faith. That's called faith, Sean.
Well, it makes for good booksellers, right? If you either believe or you don't. So anyway,
the 2015. You know, but you can't blame them for thinking Star Trek is better than Star Wars. Star Trek is better than Star Wars.
No, I don't think so. How does a guy with pointy ears beat out Yoda? Well, I guess Yoda has pointy ears.
Yoda has green. Pointy ears.
Yeah, but he's green. How do you?
So a Vulcan's blood is green.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
And see, I didn't
in fact,
say, I don't
some
care.
People think that, you know, as Vulcans get older and they shrink because they live hundreds and hundreds of years, mm-hmm. that they eventually just turn into little Yodas. So,
you think so?
You know how, like, older people grow older, they start shrinking? Well, they think Yoda's just a really old Vulcan.
So you think it's actually, yeah, you think Star Wars and Star Trek, like, at the end of the saga, if it ever ends in our lifetime, which it never will.
Oh, Disney owns it now. It'll never end.
It'll never end. Yeah, I know. The product sales alone, that thing's went off the charts. Anyway, Nathan, Shadow Nation, you know what time it is.
What time is it?
That's right. It's always fresh. It's always exciting. And it's the last for the year of 2015. It's straight off the G&T Show vaults, and it starts right
now.
Today's strange news. I didn't tell them what it was.
That's right, folks. It's time for strange news. That's weird news that Sean and I pick right out of the papers because we like the titles.
Yeah.
We haven't read them in advance, which means we tend to make a lot of mistakes. And when every time we make a mistake, you take a drink. That's the G&T drinking game. Of course, if you're planning on driving all the way home from mom's house tonight and you're listening after the Christmas weekend and you're listening to us while in your car, please don't play the G&D drinking game. And if you're doing anything else important, we just remind you, please listen responsibly.
You should have stretched that out a little bit longer. I'm still signing into my account where I can bring
That's
up
okay,
the story
Sean. Set. I'm going to start off with British astronaut Ooh. Is sorry. For dialing a wrong number from space.
Really?
Yep. Anyone can dial a wrong number, Sean, but it's not often it's done from outer space.
So what'd he say?
British Oops. Astronaut Tim Peake tweeted an apology on Christmas Day for the International Space Station from, have a drink, folks, from the International Space Station after calling a wrong number.
Okay.
He wrote, I'd like to apologize to the lady I called by mistake, saying, hello, is this planet Earth? No, not a prank, just a wrong number. The 43-year-old former helicopter pilot did not say who he was calling since he's Britain's first publicly funded astronaut.
Okay.
And he is also the first Briton to visit the space station. Millions of Britons have been following his messages closely. Peake has also used Twitter to send his Christmas greetings.
Wow! I wonder how much that cost.
I really hope it wasn't a collect call.
Does that take the...
Tim Peake calling from, you know, International yeah. Space Station. Will you accept the charges?
Yeah.
Who is it? Yeah, just give me the call.
Give me...
Hi! Greetings from planet Earth. Who are you? Oops, sorry, we better hang up. This call just cost you $30,000.
Yeah, and we no longer can associate with you people. That'd be funny. They could say, no.
We are declaring the International Space Station its own country.
They should call back and say, hey, do you have, what was it, pop in the fridge? Remember that one?
Is your refrigerator running?
Yeah, that's a classic, too. Is your fridge
running? We'd like to order a 30-minute or less pizza.
What?
You remember Domino's old 30 minutes or less pizzas?
No.
If you didn't get there in 30 minutes, it was free?
No.
They could just... Yeah, that used to be a big Domino's... I think it was Domino's. They promised if you ordered a pizza, you got it 30 minutes or less, and or it was free. And, of course, the delivery guys were responsible to get it there in 30 minutes or less. So they were speeding, and there were accidents, so they had to cancel that program. But couldn't you just see them calling from the space station and going... Yeah, we'd like to order a large pepperoni. Can you have it here in 30 minutes or less?
Over. Okay, next up the bat, nine from right now from the Today's Strange News, G&D Show Ball. Elderly woman claims neighbor chanted, ISIS is good, ISIS is great during sex.
Oh, my.
Yeah, did you see this?
I thought you'd like that one.
Maybe say something a little too far. No, I don't know. Maybe that was her, you know, her, what was it? You got to have a safety word?
Oh.
I don't know. I'd report it too.
Pink!
Yeah, anyway. An 82-year-old Wisconsin woman, they're not Snoopy at all, called police on Monday to notify authorities that she heard her neighbors screaming, asses, that's what I'm going to say, is good. Asses is great, that's what she said, while having sex. The elderly woman contacted police that morning to report hearing the chants the night before. Brown Deer Police Chief Mike Koss told the Huffington Post, Police spoke with the woman who lives alone and told her to call again if she heard more sounds. WDJT reports no follow-up reports were filed, according to the authorities. Koss said that this is the only bizarre asses-related report that he can recall. This is the first time in recent recollection that it's happened. It's just one of those odd calls, he said. Local media shared the story on Twitter, of course, and Chief Koss was quick with a witty response. He wants
can't
to.
Can't you just imagine Sean being in the middle of the deal and all of a sudden you hear?
Yeah.
Homeland Security.
Somebody call. Anyway, the police chief says, we want to show the public that we don't respond to robberies and burglaries all day long. Koss said, there's a lot of other things that goes on. Oh, God.
There's something going on over there.
That's awesome. Kudos to that guy.
Indeed.
Anyway, hey, go ahead. I'm ready.
Go ahead, please.
No, I was just going to say this was kind of news related. You know how people always say we're going to die every year.
Of course.
There's always something. So let's start back.
Every year is the end.
Mm-hmm.
The end is near.
Yeah, we've been destroyed now, guys, on planet Earth probably 5 billion times. Anyway, people in 2000, Y2K, this is what they said. Y2K was going to kill us. Remember that?
I remember that.
2001, anthrax was the one going to kill us.
Really?
02, West Nile virus.
Okay, I remember that one.
2003, weapons of mass destruction are going to kill us all. Yeah. That's
really?
Weird. Yeah. 2004, SARS is going to kill us all. 2005, bird flu is going to kill us all. 06, E. coli. You remember this? That's right. 07, vaccines are going to kill us all. That's still going on, actually. The bad economy is going to kill us all. I never heard that one. 2009, swine flu is going to kill us all. 2010, BP oil is going to kill us all. 2011, Obamacare is going to kill us all. I think that's going to make us broke, not kill us. 2012, the end of the world is going to kill us all. That was kind of a cheap one. 2013, North Korea is going to kill us all. 14, Ebola is going to kill us all. You remember this. We talked about it on the show.
Oh, yeah.
The zombie outbreak, Ebola. In 2015, ISIS, is going to kill us all. In 2016, waiting.
Waiting?
Yeah, we're waiting on somebody to step up.
Oh, what's going to kill us in 2016?
What's going to happen there? Yeah, that's all I got. That's all I got.
You know, it's coming near that time, Sean, where we'd normally get ready to go to break. However, our buddy Lou has not called in yet.
He hasn't called in yet. Is he going to call us?
I assume so. He's got to at least accept our information here if he wants to do Skype.
Yeah.
Oh, looks like he's on there.
All right.
He's on there now.
Well, go ahead.
There we go.
All right.
So we'll be able to go as soon as we're ready to go. He'll be in the waiting room.
Well, do you want to stop now and play tonight's
song?
No.
I've got another story I just want to tell you, Sean,
because
you know my feelings about sharks.
Oh my God, yes.
Well, there's a newly discovered shark, Sean.
Yes.
It's the real ninja shark.
Oh my God, your world just exploded.
It's awful because now they're hunting for me. I've told you they've been hunting for me. Now they're sitting in wait.
That's why God.
Several shark species have cool names like the great white, the hammerhead, and the goblin shark. Well, it's a cookie cutter. Now there's one more to the list. Meet the new lantern shark, the ninja lantern shark.
Oh, my God.
Researcher Victor, have a drink. Victoria Vasquez and her colleagues discovered the previously undefined shark after recovering the body from a storage unit at the California Academy of Science. It is the first lantern shark ever found in the Central American waters. So apparently, Sean, it is an all-black shark with a luminescence, and it is sitting in wait for us all.
Oh, I don't know. Does it bite? Does it attack?
It's a lantern shark. It's like a low-end feeder, but
still a shark.
Still a shark. Yeah.
Well, you knew they were coming for you someday, brother.
Yes, I did, sir. Yes, I did. I'm just sending Lou here the information that we will be ready for him in 1 minute.
That's terrific. He's in the green room. Tell him to wait in the green room and be good. Get right back to Lou Temple. Anyway, guys.
Lou Temple, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right. Tonight's guest, straight from the AMC smash hit, Lou Temple will be with us in minutes, guys. Get ready. He's one of Hollywood's greatest. He's been in The Lone Ranger, Domino, Devil's Rejects, just to name a few. He also had a stint in the minor leagues with the Seattle Mariners and the Houston Astros. So tonight, that's going to be a good one. He's going to stop by. We're going to do our rapid-fire questions on conspiracy with him. Wonder if you can pass it.
Have your recorders running, folks. It's one you don't want to miss.
Yeah, you don't want to miss this one. If you're just tuning in, guys, this is the Ghostman Demon Show. Anyway, guys, each week we play a new band, one we know, we love. We support the little man on this show. Tonight's song, Voodoo Queen. Name of the band, Song Machine. Nathan, are we okay?
We are all set.
All right. Shadow Nation, Nathan Schoonover.
Sean Burris.
Demon Hunter. We'll be right back.
Dan Yeager, Leatherface from Texas Chainsaw 3D, and you're listening to the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter Show.
I am no.
Hey, welcome back, Shadow Nation, to the one, the only Mystifying Oracle Radio, your Ghost Man and Demon Hunter Show. Hey, tonight's guest, he's an American actor best known for his role of Axel on the AMC smash hit The Walking Dead, known by most in Hollywood as the Chameleon for his ability to take any character and make it his own, baby. His resume includes such films as The Lone Ranger, Domino, just to name a few guys, and The Devil's Rejects. Before acting, he had a minor league baseball career with the Seattle Mariners, the Houston Astros, and much more, guys. Shadow Nation, please help us welcome Mr. Lou Temple to studio. Lou, what's up, brother?
Yay. Hey, thanks so much. It's great to be here, and thank you so much for having me. I so appreciate it, both to Nate and you, Sean, I think it's, let me start by saying happy holidays to all your listeners out there. I'm sitting by the roaring fire here in frigid, sunny Southern California. I only say that because on the East Coast, just speaking with Nate, that he tells me he's sitting in a balmy 70 degree East Coast Connecticut weather, which I think for this time of year is a gift, right?
Well, I'm in the balmy Indiana weather in the middle of a cornfield and a downpour. We've had tornadoes all week in Christmas time.
So you're really experiencing the winter wonderland, and the weather outside for you is frightful. And so Nate, you're experiencing the ghost of Christmas future, and then of course Sean, you're experiencing the ghost of Christmas past and present, and me, I'm just experiencing. So,
well, I gotta say, Lou, for me and the kids, this was the first year we went out to see Santa Claus and look up at the sky and the stars and see if we would gently see him pass the house and the moon at midnight. Rather than that, we've seen trailers go past the and cows and whatever.
Flying and witches and tigers and lions and bears. Oh my, yeah.
Hey, brother, listen, it's awesome to have you in studio.
I mean, this is great. It's always good to talk shop. We forget that. You know, we don't really take any time off, and things are always cooking and being developed and finished and polished, and there's always information to be had or shared. And you know, Santa is he's a busy guy, but so is the genre world of film and graphic novels and books and all things of eclectic interest, I guess I would say. I guess for me right now, obviously the big push or the big news is Rob Zombie's new movie 31 that we have coming out.
Yeah,
it's in Sundance, which is the end of January, the 21st. We premiere as the midnight opening of the Sundance Film Festival, which is a real feather in Rob's cap. It's a real feather, I think, in the genre's cap, because it kind of recognizes that type of material, or just Rob as I don't like calling it legit, because I feel like it's always, all of it's legit, but
yeah.
You know, let's call it sort of arty then, and we get a little arty knob, and that'll probably be where it begins and ends, because this movie that we've built is mayhem, and I'm sure that you've seen, and of course I've seen recently, that Rob's having a little trouble, as usual, getting the MPAA to see it his way.
Right.
That it's a good, you know, a good family film.
I'm sure. Yeah, like the, you know, and the good thing about Rob and the genre that you're in and the films that you've been attached to, I'm a kid of the 70s, you know, and Rob has the keys to, you know, Halloween, stuff like that, and he's really brought the passion. And you too, and all the guys on set, Sid, Bill Mosley, all these guys, it's like you guys have that passion inside, and you can see it on the film. Did you grow up with these flicks, man? Is that what drives you in this type of direction? It seems like the horror is where you're going towards.
Yeah, I would love to be the guy that is like Rob Zombie and says, "Yeah, man, when I was a kid and this," but beyond sort of the basics, no, I was not a guy that was consuming the horror genre and creature features and comics. And I came into that genre, or this genre rather, late, but through Rob Zombie, through The Devil's Rejects, actually. And it was a bit of an awakening, a really great, startling experience to be exposed to this type of work. And you referenced Bill and Sid, and those are two of the guys really that taught me and gave me the baton, so to speak, to continue to carry as well as they do. They work all the time, but there is a different style. There's a different essence to the work that's done, in a good horror genre, in a, as you say, a passionate horror genre. There's an impending, lurking doom that Vincent Price was able to carry in. There's an invasion of personal space on set in the scenes. And Bill and Sid taught me this, and I was like, oh my God, why are you guys always in my face every time I say a line or what's? And I realized ever so subtly there's a stylization to the work, and it creates the same effect on screen to the audience. And it's really interesting. So, and then at some point on Devil's Rejects, day in, day out, having lunch with Bill Moseley, he said, this is an area in film where I get to work. I get to develop a Chop Top. I get to develop an Otis, whereas maybe in a big action adventure, I'm a spoke in the wheel that says he went that away. Or just based on the narrative, I might not have as much character arc. And I really do recognize that. So, but I think the things that you hold as a foundation to this show, as audience members, as enthusiasts, as well-versed students of things eclectic, things weird, things scientific, things horror, is passion, fundamentally, always. That's the basis of it. And that is what any good film, particularly in the horror genre, absolutely must have as its essence. And I see that, and I quickly learned that. So I've always taken that as with a lot of pride, and I've always maintained it as my absolute responsibility to deliver with passion. So these characters that I'm allowed to build and create, from Adam Banjo to Noel Cluggs to, yeah, Sheriff Winston to coming up to Psycho Head in 31, I realize one thing they need is to be passionate and committed to the character. And commitment and passion are one and the same. And so And nobody is as passionate at telling a story as Rob Zombie. And again, I think the proof is in his pudding of the films that we see him.
I'd have to agree. What do you think, Nathan?
I was just thinking, Lou, I'm listening to you speak, and Sean and I talk about this all the time.
Yes.
I grew up on a Pennsylvania Deutsch farm. My father and his friends all had a very thick Appalachian accent.
Yeah, it's so interesting, that area out there.
So when I was going to school and I decided I wanted to learn theater and broadcasting, the first thing they did was send me to someone to teach me to speak.
Yes.
And how is that? Do you ever try and... When are the times when you try and bring out your natural accent and times when you try to hold it
back?
Well,
that's a great... We're all old dogs here, so we can use references like the signs, the times are a changing, Bob Dylan. So that's the first thing that I would say. And interestingly, change is the most constant thing that I encounter today, is actual change. So when we got started, Nate, diction and dialect were as important as appearance and presentation, and a very big part of that, as was the telephone attached to the wall, as was the cassette deck tapes that we put in our cars, you know, begrudgingly getting our CD changers and now streaming everything. So my response to that is today this change is so in effect, and there's so much less of the norm, or so much less requirement to have a uniform sound or something that is not offensive. For instance, when I say offensive, I just mean different, and I don't mean it offensive in the way of ugly. Just, you know, they used to say that's abrupt, the Southern sound, or, you know, colloquial, that's or crazy. It fits here and it doesn't fit there. But today, not so much. So if I were starting today, if you and I were starting today, we would be told more than likely to be ourselves, because ourselves becomes our brand. But when we started, certainly everybody wanted to change that. And I had a conversation with a Southern man, Billy Bob Thornton, here in Hollywood when I first came. And he said, man, you know, he was on to it from the onset. He said, you know, you are who you are, and that's who is your best. So if you're a Southern speaker, that's how it's going to go. And you'll find your place, and your place will find you. Don't go changing. And really, we've come to that. I see now that our brand becomes our color. I'm a bright red or a yellow, and that's just something that kind of stands out with bursts of you know, excitement and delivery or victimization or whatnot. And so in whatever project that has brought me in to do part, help tell their story, they know this about me, or it's as much that. Occasionally they'll say, let's dim that down, or let's bring it down a little bit. But for the most part, hey, bring it, you know, bring that crazy mother, you know, the game, and let him off the leash. Mix or just give us a little piece of it. So, you know, long answer to your very specific question. I don't worry about it today as much as I did when we got started, and that became, we were very conscious. If anyone's listening out there, know the hardest thing that will be asked of you is, who are you? So know who you are. It's the old question, like when you graduate from high school, what are you going to do when you get out of school? Oh. Well, that's really very applicable to in today's industry. Who are you? So know who you are. Have an answer. The answer is not, well, who do you want me to be? I can be anyone you want. That's not the answer anymore. It used to be, you know, back in the Olivier days and whatnot, I can transform into anything you'd like. You know, that's not the game today. The game is about specificity. And if you're a bright, shiny color of taupe and you fit in seamlessly into the landscape, blend in, sometimes that's really exactly what they're looking for. So don't be shy about who you are. Don't be shy about what you sound like. Just know what you sound like. That's the main thing. Know what your voice is and who you are, and know that that's okay. That's your brand, using a buzzword.
Let you be you, baby. Now, listen, I got to ask you, because we covered...
I just wanted to say, Sean, that one of our listeners in the chat room wanted to say that... She doesn't know what I know, looking at you right near here.
Yeah.
But she wanted to say that you have the best mustache next to me.
Oh.
I've seen your mustache, Nate, and I would personally take that as a compliment. Thank her very much. You know, that's another thing. Getting into the game, I was never a guy that was one of the things. To side what you just spoke about was the facial hair and long hair and odd looks, those weren't things that when I started in the 80s, those weren't things that were looked upon as really castable. And so I always had to, you know, that's kind of who I was, but I had to go against that grain. I always had sideburns and a little facial hair. But of course, recently I grew the mustache, and it's just like Tom Selleck. It just became more me than I did. You know, my mustache has more followers than I do. To shed light to Nate's comment, because we're on a visual here. I have recently done a project where it was apparent that maybe Sans mustache, not having the mustache in this character, would serve the story best, and that's always my intent. So I am without the Grinch took my mustache this holiday season.
Oh no!
And I am naked lipped. I'm a bald faced liar today, but it's different, and I always applaud being different. And you know, getting back to that one last thing about knowing who you are, you know, we always were told growing up, and again, this is a generational thing, not to belabor how old we are, but, you know, work on your weakness. That's hooey. No one's ever going to hire you for your weakness. Work, be better at your strengths, you know? If you're good at one thing, be great at it, you know, or bring it to the party, because that's what's going to keep getting you continued work. And I find that out. You know, no one really hires me to be British or Russian or to play a woman, as much as I would love to do those things to stretch my muscle. The reality is I get hired to be a colloquial Southern crazy hyper rat. Right. And that's my brand. And that's what keeps them coming back for more. So
now, are you able to help the Brits on the Walking Dead set with their accents?
I thought I was. I would try to. I did. You know, occasionally try to give them a little curl. You know, there's so many. The vowel sounds are what's, you know, key. You were referencing your heritage in the Appalachian, and you know, it's the. There's a laziness and a curl to all the you know, tonations of the sound. So, but you know, they work exceptionally hard. Andrew Lincoln works really hard at his accent for the show, and I think he does a fantastic job. And they do. The Brits are trained to land dialects, and they're just trained to land everything. And he and when the governor David Morrissey was working, and Lauren Cohen, who plays Maggie, they start the week with the dialect coach and work on all their lines all the way through, and then they come to work and deliver. So I think they do a good job. So if you ever hear it slide a minute, it's probably towards the end of the week that we're working on. I tell you, a movie I helped a guy a lot with was. Tom Hardy in the movie Lawless, which was a bootlegging movie. And we were down in Georgia doing that. And he was kind of working on a specific Southern mumble.
It's a great movie.
Yeah, that he was doing. So, you know, those guys actually have to, you know, develop a toolkit of other sounds. And we, as Americans, we should too, because I think it would kind of open up. And at some point it will, you know, it'll become a global village and all our sounds will cross over, and it won't be an American accent or a British accent. It'll just be a, you know, pitches, highs and lows. And
right.
We need a baritone in here and that type of thing, which is interesting because that's exactly how Gore Verbinski directed Rango. The animated feature was all about mixing and modulating vocal tones, which was fantastic. Great experience.
Now, I got to ask you, Lou, sticking with The Walking Dead, smash hit.
Yes, please.
Smash hit. You're a part of it.
Cultural phenomenon. Pop cultural phenomenon.
It's going insane. Huge honor being a part of that, I'm sure. And
listen, it is.
When Nathan and I had the TV show, just reality TV, it wasn't nothing big like The Walking Dead. You know, at the hotel, when we would go back, they would give us our script, or not script, but whatever was going to happen that night. And we would, you know, go over it and kind of read. And sometimes we'd get together. Sometimes we wouldn't. Walk us through a day in the life of Lou while you were on the set of such a smash hit like The Walking Dead. When you guys went back to the hotel, which you almost had to live at, I'm sure, during filming, did you guys get in groups and say, okay, today over lunch, guys, let's go over this script and rehearse it? Or how does that work? How's the process?
You know, the scripts are sent down a couple weeks in advance of shooting. One of the great things about The Walking Dead is they're not, some shows are scripted and built for the entire season. There's a Bible and it's set out and all 13, 16, 21 episodes are in place and this is how it's going to go. And you have a sense of where you're going and a beginning, a middle, and an end from episode one to episode, let's say 16. The Walking Dead, however, is a bit more organic. So the writers are paying attention to the show and the work being done on set on the day and are adjusting their writing in real time. So when Norman Reedus picks up as Daryl a crossbow and shoots it, that's not something really that was in the script. He's, in essence, he's Johnny Appleseed planting the seeds of his own storyline. So the writers are paying attention and working to develop storylines in the moment. And then the scripts are sent out and we do a table read and go through. And it's very collaborative with the producer, the writer, and the director for that episode. And typically, as a group, as a very collaborative group, this works and this does not. So there's a read through, let's say at lunch or a morning prior to work, of a script that's going to be done 2 weeks down the road, and here's what's working, and here's what's clumsy and what's not working. The writer goes back and makes some adjustments. Then we get the script again, and we do another read-through, and it starts to sing, and maybe a few more adjustments are made until it then is in a good working order. Then it becomes the day that we work on, we do the work, and the director has the script storyboarded and the shots are listed and they're set up and we do a walk, what's called a walk and talk. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to go through the prison, through this tunnel way. There's a group of walkers. You don't know how to kill them yet. Rick's going to indicate we're going to go here, then turn around and show the walkers. And we sort of see how the puzzle works. Now, that's my idea of how I conceptualize it, but you show me how it's going to work for you in real time, and then we rehearse it on its feet, called a blocking rehearsal, and the director then it says, oh, I see, because of this, that doesn't work. I've got to change my camera. I got a light a little different here. Okay, give me a few. And then the writer's like, I noticed that you weren't able to really get this line out as well as at the table read because you were chopping off the head of a walker. Let's just whack that line, no problem. And I love the improv that you put in there. You want a taste of this bitch? That's really friggin' cool. Let's keep that if you don't mind. And so on and so forth. I guess the main point of all that is that the collaboration of The Walking Dead is paramount to none, and it's exceptional. And no show or film have I been part of where the work has been done by a group of people all on the same side of the rope. There's not an ego. And this all starts really from Andrew Lincoln, the number one. You know, he's the quarterback, and he's a tireless worker, and he's really a genius at collaboration. He really wants everyone to participate. And that's a big part of what the success of the show is. So then you, you know, we go through all that rehearsal. Then we'll go get touch-ups and makeup and you know, you had a little more dirt and you need more wax on your mustache. And this prison suit that you're wearing now is not as dirty as the one you wore in the preceding scene. Let's switch that out. You know, those types of fine tuning. And then we go to work, and it could change in the moment of the work as well. And yeah. But the great thing about it is the preparation for that and the idea that everyone is giving in to telling the story. Everyone's prepared to make these fine-tuned adjustments. And I think, again, this is why it works so hard, well, because of everyone's efforts and works hard. But, yeah, we kick the scripts around a lot. Now, I've worked on other shows where they don't. Hey, this is our gig. I need you to land here. Say the words that have been written for you. Do your thing as the actor. Make them live. And let's hope for the best. So that's not the case. And those shows typically aren't as successful. So I think the main thing is the writers have a sense of where you're, the life of your character is coming from and going, but also knows that you know best for the life of that character. And they'll try to introduce something and hope that you are able to make it live. So there's just this symbiotic relationship in the entire production that makes it right. And just to use that word, again, part of the success of the show, a huge part of the success of the show is the fan base. And we call them audience members as opposed to really fans, because they inform the show as to what needs to happen or how, as much as the show informs them. There's just this relationship that, again, is symbiotic, and it just works. So to be an audience member of The Walking Dead is a huge responsibility. You have to pay attention and participate. And these are things with all good shows, Breaking Bad, Mad Men, Game of Thrones, Sons of Anarchy. You go on and on with these anthologies. They all have this type of responsible audience participation. That's so different, again, to when we got started, Nate and Sean, that we have to acquiesce to the change and be good with that.
Okay. Now, I tell you, I know we're running out of time. I just got...
Oh, dear.
Huh?
I'm sorry. I'm just talking.
No. We can stay on all day,
as you want there, Lou. I'll go as long as you want.
Cool. Yeah, we can stay on all week, brother. Hey, listen, I was going to ask you about two things, actually. On the show, you know, we do paranormal. We do everything. We're America's number one strange and weird, baby. And from ghosts, demons, what you aliens, you name it, man. We do a top 10 conspiracy, like a Jeopardy thing, where we go through it. Did Nathan tell you about it already?
No, I did not.
No, okay. But I'm curious.
Well, we do like 60 seconds, and you true or false it, you know, we go through and we ask the questions, you know, whatever it is, and you say, you know, true or whatever, and you can speculate on it. It's kind of fun. But first I want to ask you about being a Louisiana boy. Growing up there in the swamps, when we did the TV show, we went on the hunt for the Lugaroo. I know you've heard of that. Being from the South, down there on the bayou, and hearing all these stories, and the voodoo, and the witchcraft, and the black magic, do you have any great stories of being down there, you know, and coming in contact with any weird or any great stories you heard while you were down there?
I think there's so many stories that are our life, you know, that are, they're absolutely real. There's been so many times I've been over on the West Bank in voodoo lounges with the cockaroo and some Creole witch doctor, you know, woman that has put a hex on you for love or lust, or where you've lost days in a part of town that you could never explain or find again. I can recall being in nightclubs and doing music and playing where you had met somebody and you swore that you had drinks with them and come to find out you hadn't been there at all. and that person didn't exist, and you went to the address or you called this phone number. We used to give matchbooks with names and numbers, and the address didn't exist, and all these things that were in the moment, absolute, real, and then you can't recreate. You can't trace your footsteps from the night before, and that's so typical.
Wow.
You know, funerals, processions, which are so, you know, you celebrate the lives, and you might take a piece of the body, hair, for instance, and burn it into ash and then drink the ash and champagne in celebration of that deceased's life. Mm-hmm. And make that part of you, that person's spirit, and you know you're able to kind of maintain their existence in you, and there's so many stories, and the rituals that are passed around become realities. You know, Mardi Gras is a ritual of the king and queen, but it's really about passing culture on and maintaining it in the inner sanctum of that world. And so yeah, absolutely believe in all of it, and it's all for I think to give your senses the opportunity to live, you know, your sense of the unknown. And as an actor or an artist or a ghost hunter, I think the greatest thing that you can have is faith and belief in the unknown. There's no way I knew how this interview was going to go, or that I would meet the two of you and how it would go. But what I did know is that the unknown would serve me, that it's great, for instance. And so you must have to do that when you go into a home, or you go into a mausoleum, or you go into a building. You must know that the unknown will serve you regardless of how, but and that you couldn't draw it up as great as it's going to be. And so that's pretty much how I approach my work and my life. And I think that the voodoo of Louisiana serves that greatly. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that place is... The place is crazy, man. When we went down there, we spent, I don't know, Nathan, what was it, 3 weeks there? You can just feel it, man, in that town.
New Orleans, still my favorite town in the world, Sean.
New Orleans.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I tell you, Lou, and I know I'm jumping around here with my ADD. That's how we rock and roll on this show, baby.
I like it. Yeah.
Mister.
Yeah,
we're ADDJs.
Yeah, that's it.
Don't. Rolling Stone grows no moss.
Keep it going. Keep it fresh. Hey. Baseball, baby. America's pastime. You were a slugger. Let's talk about it. What happened? How'd you get in that?
Yeah, I love it. I was just referencing, I found out today that one of my friends just passed. God rest his soul. Bobby Deuce, long time. And this is a great story. Long time player, a scout, a coach, a mentor for the Atlanta Braves. And it's interesting because... as a player, at the end of his career, he became bitter and jaded that he never really made the big leagues. And he didn't make the big leagues because, for a variety of reasons, but he just got in his way a little bit. But a lot of guys played ahead of him, and it was sort of at a time where the color barrier was being broken, and he was a gentleman from the South that carried a bit of racism. And he became an unpleasant person through just the bitterness of life and out of baseball. And then he asked a good friend of his to get him back in, who put him down to be a coach. Yeah. And somewhere in Mexico, he was coaching, and he got into a bottle of mezcal or tequila or something. And it just, this crazy visions changed his life. And he kind of turned around. He turned the corner to become this great Zen-like mentor who became Henry Aaron, Hank Aaron's first coach, and the guy that taught him to play baseball for the Atlanta Braves, Bobby Deuce. Whoa. And somehow his life got changed. This is one of these voodoo stories and visions and the lore of it. And so, but I love baseball, and it's the guys like that that are in baseball that I've always loved. Bobby Cox, manager of the Braves, Hall of Famer, it is great. My days were with the Houston Astros, and I was around guys like Craig Biggio, who's an East Coast guy.
Oh, yeah.
That just was invited into the Hall of Fame, and Jeff Bagwell, another East Coast guy who I hope gets a few votes to get in this year as well. And I think Curt Schilling's up for the Hall. I'm not sure he'll get in, but he had a great career. I love baseball because, look, if an alien came to the United States and just needed to relax, I submit to you that a baseball stadium would be the perfect place to just sit back and watch this alien bizarre event unfold and relax.
Cold beer and
this
a dog.
Is what I do with Europeans when they come over. I say, come to a ball game and just don't ask any questions about what the rules are, how it's played. Just socialize and talk and watch and relax, or at least I find it that way. Just the zen of life is on a baseball field.
Except for the Yankees and the Red Sox. You don't want to go relax.
Could be a brawl. We've got that out here with the Dodgers and the Giants. It was a great baseball season this year. Nate was referencing that Kansas City is one of your affiliates, and that they won the World Series this year, and they put together a really great club.
Yeah, they did.
I'm not a huge numbers guy, analytics, but that is where baseball's going. That's where numbers are going. We get back to this: what's your brand? Your brand is how many Instagram followers you have. Those are numbers, and your brand is how many YouTube followers, how many eyeballs, how many numbers. I'm not a big advocate of that, but I recognize it, and that's part of change. So baseball's changing just like the industry of film and television and ghost hunting is. Are analytics involved in ghost hunting? Are there numbers?
There used to be. There are now.
Are you getting – is it going away from a sensibility? The senses that we talk about, the senses that you must have to – discover, are we going to, well, the readouts say, and we have an electromagnetic derivation charge that indicates.
It really is. It really is. Because it used to be you went in the hopes of seeing or feeling something, and if you were lucky, you caught it on film.
Yeah.
Now they go in and they set up the equipment, and they don't even care if they see anything as long as they recorded it.
Right.
Yeah.
And that, for me, that took all the love of what I did out of it.
What is it that technology? So, we get into these huge metaphors, and these conversations about what is artificial intelligence and where does it lead us? And can we just go by the numbers that, you're a great ghost hunter because your readouts indicate that, or, because activity on your seismic charts indicate that usually when you set up something in a house, something occurs. I don't know. I think when all this goes down, when Skype falls down and the grid goes down, we're going to get right back to the campfire, guys. Uh-huh. And be sitting around, and it's going to go right back to once upon a time. There was a house, and in this house, So,
and that's where the magic's at.
Yeah, I think that's exactly where we're, and we all continue to be delighted with the art of storytelling, the art of listening and or telling a story, and we love discovery. It's called fishing. It's not called catching, right? We play hide and go seek, not hide and go find. What you do, the delight, the thrill of discovery is exactly what I do. The thrill of discovering what Axel feels in a moment is as good as how getting shot in the head at the governor in the end, you know? So I think that's, we still like that, even though the numbers would say, you know, well, ratings show us that we like this. But I think we still love discovery, and you're a big part of discovery. You know, what you do is discovery plus, you know?
Yeah.
Well, so, what Sean and I always did, which was different than other groups out there, was we were more interested in the legend than
the story, the
equipment. So it was, you know, we wanted to go out and experience the legend.
Yeah. Well,
there are remarkable things, and I think that those things that we did, you know, the legends that we pass on or support, or, you know, I think those are important to our communities, you know, and they become part of the glue that binds our communities. And that's why Louisiana is so strong, because of our, you know, that community is built on its lore, its legends. So Texas has great community as well, built on its legends and you know, those wild West and gunfighters.
Every picture I see of you right now, we're showing a picture. You're hooking them horns. Now, somebody said that's Illuminati symbol that you big stars in Hollywood use, but I said no, that's hook 'em horns, man.
Hook 'em horns. You know, it's interesting because I took a picture right around this time last year with Rob at his birthday party, and he's like, "Dude, you're not a rock star," and I was like, "Oh yeah, well, you know, I'm standing here with one," and so. Takes one to know one, and you're right, I'm not. So ever since then, this time last year, you'll start noticing, I'm dropping the peace sign like John Lennon. give peas a chance.
That's
not
a new
carrots.
Thing, baby. You're bringing it back.
Yeah, I'm bringing back the peace sign, which now becomes my moniker with the mustache. The mustache, your friend in the chat room, started with the Lone Ranger. I was doing the Lone Ranger for Walt Disney with Johnny Depp playing the Native American Tonto. And The Walking Dead had asked if I would come do Axel. And I told them that I would love to do that, but I was still finishing up on Lone Ranger, and I was unable to actually change my look. And I said, I know how this goes typically on production. You're going to want to take this mustache off, and I just can't. And they said, no, we love the mustache. I said, oh, baloney. I was being like a girl that you date, you know, like, no, you don't want to go out with me, and hoping that they did. And they said, no, we love the mustache. Please come. And I'm like, no, go hire someone else. But finally, I did commit, and I'm so thankful. As you said, it's been an honor to be part of that show for now and forever. You know, now they refer to you as, you know, one of the ones that was lost along the way, which is great. I loved what we were able to do with Axel, and I felt like there was a lot more to be done, but what we were able to accomplish in his time there, I was really proud of that, particularly as the shocking death that he had. I thought that we were able to pull that off with a great effect.
And I'll say with the death of Axel, I remember sitting there watching. And up until then, you had your questions about Axel. Was he a
You should, yeah. We were working those, yeah. By the way. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And we were all sitting there. And then all of a sudden, he's giving this speech about his brother. And you're liking Axel. You're like, oh, you know what? Yeah. I like Axel. And the moment you said to yourself, I like Axel, that bullet just came in there.
Yeah. We really were trying to Forrest Gump you there. We were really trying to manipulate that place of sentiment. My, you know, they had asked me kindly when it got down to the point where the governor was going to make an appearance and he couldn't be impotent. He had to draw blood, and it was really a conversation about which of us, and they had talked an awful lot about some of the regulars going down, and I was privy to some of those conversations because they had let me know 3 weeks in advance, hey, you're on the chopping block. And I was like, oh shit, I just built a swimming pool. Now I can't pull it up. Now I have a skateboard ramp in my backyard.
Right.
So, you know, and And then when I you do the denial dance, you know, what about Alan? That guy's an asshole. Let's get rid of him. Or baby Judith. Yeah. She's going to be trouble. You don't want a baby on set.
Right.
No. So then you commit to wanting to do the best job that you possibly can. And people, the castmates who are so lovely, they'd come up to you and say, oh, I'm so sorry. And I would just think to myself, dude, you have no idea how close it was to being you. And if you knew, you wouldn't be so sorry. They had asked me if I'd like to come in and help write the episode. And I said, oh, shoot, no, you do too good a job. But I would say that I would like a shocking, you know, a gut punch type of death. And I remembered seeing the Zapruder tapes, I think they are, of the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah.
And how an abrupt a headshot is. And that's what I was looking for. And I thought we did pull that off. Yeah. with a great achievement. So I'm really happy to be part of the show. I can't speak enough to how people ask me all the time, Nate, Sean, what did you take from Walking Dead? Did you get your prison outfit, or did you take something of Rick's or Daryl? You know, I took friendships in my heart that I will have forever. You know, my relationships with the castmates who I still see out, as you know, out at Walking Dead conventions and different shows and events, those are dear, and it's a family. It's starting to become like a step family. I show up now, and it's like a family reunion where your dad married four different times. Oh, you're season 5 now. Oh, okay, yeah. Oh, you're Alexandria. Oh, we've never met. Hi, Corey Brill. Man, you're great. You're great. Yeah, I heard about you, Axel, Lou, Tim. Yeah, we have the same dad, different mom, same dad. Nice Lou. To meet you. Hey.
People are saying on the forums, those Walking Dead forums, I've seen it said before, Lou is the closest cast member that's ever came to landing Carol on the show.
You were all right. All right. Yeah, I think, well, look at Carol. Look at her character arc and look at where she's come from, being a battered victim spouse to she's the Rick-tator now. Oh, she's kicking ass and taking names. I like to think that I had a great part in saving her life, in being a human sandbag laying there. If they mean getting laid with, if that's what getting laid with Carol is,
yes,
but protecting, being a bullet shield for her, then yes, I did.
Freaking Black
Widow,
man.
There was an episode, interesting, well, I think Daryl said, they said, where's Carol? Oh, she's in the generator room with Axel.
Yeah.
You know, who knows?
What were you guys doing down there? Come on, give us a spoiler here. Come on.
We might have kicked our boots off and, darned some socks, darn socks.
See, you guys heard it here first. Not the Talking Dead, the G&D show. You heard it right here.
Right. That's it. That's it. But Melissa McBride is adorable.
Yeah.
And it's a fantastic talent and a really a sweet, sweet person. And just, I'm so happy for her and all that she's done all of them there's not anybody that's been on the show that I would say, screw that guy or whatever.
Right.
I liked all of them. I was first exposed to the show when being in the genre, you see the graphic novels, as they're called. Used to be comic books in my day, but they're graphic novels now because they're more developed, and I get that.
Right.
And I thought, wow, these are really graphic. They'll never make a television show out of this. And lo and behold, they did. And they had brought me in casting to read for the part of Merle. I did that, and thankfully they hired Michael Rooker. But a few weeks later they called and they said, would you come in and read for Merle's brother? Doesn't have a name. We don't even have any dialogue for him, but just read the same Merle dialogue, but different, like his brother. And thankfully they hired Norman Reedus to play Daryl. So when Axel came around, they thought, okay, well, Lou, that's Lou's color. That fits well.
Yeah.
And so that was great.
You would have still fit. A lot of people talk about it. You see it when I visit the forums, see what people are,
all talking about. And a lot of people, including myself, think you had so much more to offer to the plot. I know the writers are great and everything, but every once in a while, I have to question their judgment calls because you.
Yeah, there was, there was a lot of consideration. It was very difficult. You know, it was a lot of people sitting on the fence, producers. You know, Robert Kirkman really loved the character that he had written for Axel, and Andrew Lincoln really went to the producers to at bat for me, which they just got painted into a picture that they had to come up with something. So again, you recognize it and you commit to it. You know, and that being said, there was some storyline for Axel that wasn't completed. There was a point in time where there were some stories being developed for down the road where he was going to take Beth out into the woods in a kidnapping and a rape situation, and it turns out he was a serial killer and it would be a mercy killing to stop the apocalypse.
Wow.
You know, that kind of thing. So I was always reserving those fangs in the closet if we needed to pull them out, so to speak. And so it was great. You know, it was and continues to be an exciting, wonderful experience. I think the show is so successful for all the right reasons, you know, and again, it does start with a heritage and a climate of culture. When Andrew Lincoln, Sarah Wayne Callies, who played Laurie, John Bernthal, Shane, they started the show, and Jeff DeMunn, and they all agreed, look, we're going to do 6 of these. The show will be done. Let's do the best that we can. And then it ends up landing. And they took that approach, and they continued to pass it on down the line. When I came aboard, that was the expectation. They invite everybody in to participate. Everyone's brought in as someone to help, yeah. You know, help toe the line. And so that's unique and special with that show.
All right. Well, I tell you, Lou, we're getting out of time. I want to play
brother. Nice to say hello.
Hey, I want to play the G&D show rapid fire for we can put you up there with the championship, yes, like with Scott Wilson.
And then I
got to
ask
Wilson.
A couple questions after that. Let's definitely get in the G&D game.
Let's do it.
Yeah, we got to put you up there with Scott Wilson, Mikey Rooker. Okay, now this is going to be the conspiracy game, rapid fire G&D show. And what we're going to go through is top 10 conspiracies in America, mostly. And you say yes and no, and you can add whatever you want to it. But keep in mind,
okay,
60 seconds.
Oh, geez. Okay, that's hard for me to do anything in 60 seconds.
That's okay. We'll see where you're at. Rooker and Scott Wilson, they did okay. Scott, I think, got 2 out of 10. But... All right, here we go. There are no losers. Nathan, start the clock.
Clock is started.
Here we go. All right, top 10 conspiracy theories, September 11th. Was it inside job?
Yes, absolutely.
The assassination of JFK. Was an inside job.
It was an inside job, absolutely. We started that in New Orleans.
Oh, number 3, Roswell. Aliens or not?
Absolutely. We've got so many outer space folk that in Roswell, Picasso has less paint than we've got aliens.
Hey, number 4, NASA faked the moon landing.
No. We've been up to the moon several times. Hell, we've been to Mars, by the way, well before we announced it. So, yeah, no, we're not faking anything.
Inside scoop. Number 5, the Illuminati and the New World Order. They're in charge of things.
No.
No.
They would like to think they can barely control themselves. They have nothing. They're not in charge of anything.
Number 6, Elvis Presley faked his own death.
No. Elvis was killed.
Okay. He was killed!
Yeah, he got knocked off.
See, you Hollywood insiders know all this stuff. Us guys out here in the cornfields, we don't hear all these conspiracy truths.
We got 6 of 10, Sean. I think he's leading the record right now.
Did you hear him, though? It's funny, Shadow Nation, if you were listening with Lou Temple, he said earlier, I made a reference to the Illuminati with these hook 'em horn signs, and he did acknowledge the existence of the Illuminati and the...
I did. New conspiracy started.
That's it.
I got it. The Illuminati started. But they did very little control. I mean, they can't even control their bladders.
Well, it's funny, because Lou, because I'm a Mason. And people always say, you know, well, you know, you belong to this order that tries to control the world. And I'm like, we can't run a successful pancake breakfast.
No.
And you think
no.
we're trying to rule the world.
Yeah. I mean, a good white elephant sales about as far as that. Yeah.
Okay. Let's go over the last one you didn't get. Shakespeare was not Shakespeare. It was actually.
No, I don't think so. He was, he had a lot of plagiarism.
Wow. They said it was an actual, another person, Francis Bacon, Christopher Marlowe, and William Stanley. Said it was three different people. That was one. One person
they
said
they were
the Queen
basically
of
trying to, they used Shakespeare to write the stuff that they didn't want to have under their name because it was lewd.
Yeah, I think that he probably wasn't a single voice. Let's put it that way.
Okay. Paul McCartney's dead, number eight.
No.
They say he died in a car crash in 66.
Not only is he not dead, he will never die. he will outlive Keith Richards.
That's what I was going to say. He's right up there with Keith. Okay, number nine, Harold Wilson. No, that's the wrong one. Reptilians control the government. I'm sorry. Number nine.
No one controls the government. No.
The government has absolutely no control.
They have no control. Why Donald Trump would want to be part of that, I have no idea. But no, he has no control. Reptiles have no control. You know, the reptile thing is almost out of vogue, I think. You know, there's got to be something new. I'm back into the artificial intelligence. I'm more interested in that. Reptiles a little. That's too primal.
Like the Manchurian Candidate type of thing. Huh?
Yeah, I feel like we're closer to something that's real. I am also interested in the idea that we're all supporting a virus within us that could at any point turn into something that we're watching on television. I mean, if any of you have had shingles, you know there's a live virus that.
Oh yeah.
could spawn itself. We have crazy PTSD illusion, you know, ideas. There's a lot more reality that we don't take into consideration of, you know.
I think that's why the zombie flicks always hit home, because people think, shit, man, this can really happen. This could.
Yeah, yeah. I think, and you know, Robert Kirkman, this is not my theory, but Robert has a sense that the apocalyptic, there's a desire for an apocalyptic fallout in order to reboot society. Let's have this happen so we can start over.
Cleanse ourselves.
Yeah, yeah. Get back to some sort of sense of civility.
That's kind of like, what was that show where the trees released that? It was really good. Stephen King.
The Happening.
Yes, remember that?
Oh, that's right, yeah, yeah.
That was spooky. Okay, number 10.
We're still trying to burn trees, so we're going to...
Right.
That's not going to happen. And the reptiles will have nowhere to hide, but that iPhone 7 could take over the world whenever comes out.
The reptilians are at Lou's house with the One World Order, the New World Order, yeah.
Lou, couple quick questions from the room here. One, I got to meet you at Walker Stalker, but people are asking where else there's going to be chances to meet you. Are you doing any more Walker Stalkers? Are you doing
I like the Walker Stalker because they're so well organized. They're typically in large city or at least large menus. And
you doing Wizard World in Vegas this year?
I'm not. I don't. You know, it's strange. You either do Walker Stalker or you do Wizard World. And apparently there's a non-compete, but I'm not sure about that. They just never invite me. I so would love to do Wizard World. But
people are saying if you're going to Wizard World, they're going to, Jill in the chat room saying she's going to be the first in line if you go. So.
I'll go just to stand in line with Jill.
Okay.
How's that? I'll go. We'll stand in Scott Wilson's line, in Herschel's line, and when we get up to the head of the line, we'll say, "Holy shit, you've got both your legs."
the movie line.
I, yeah, I think I'm going to do the Walker Stalker that's in Dallas. I'm going to do a Walker Stalker in Denver. I'm going to do a show in Cheyenne, Wyoming this year. I'm going to do, of course, the Atlanta show. I think there is a show, a Walker Stalker in Chicago that I'm out in the great United States of America. And also, I think I've got a couple of UK shows and one in France. So I'll be out there. And I'll, as we spoke to, you know, by this time, Rob Zombie's movie 31 will be out with or without the NC-17 rating. And so there'll be a lot to talk about and a lot
now,
to see.
What are we looking at with 31? What is 31 about?
Mayhem. It's if you can imagine, it's Rob's most intense, most graphic, and unapologetic team film that he's made. I mean, there's just Devil's Rejects had a sense of some humor, dark humor that gave you a break. And 31 does not. It is just one torrid, tense, harrowing moment after the next. So a group of people are captured, kidnapped on the 31st of October. Rob saw a newspaper article on the 31st of October. Apparently, more people go missing than any other day of the year. And so he came up with a story that they are captured and victimized in a warehouse by a group of ghouls and hooligans in clown makeup, essentially. And if you can survive for 24 hours, then you're free to go.
Wow.
Nice. It's a lot like the DMV.
Yeah. Okay, I know we got to wrap up the show. Number 10, global warming. Fact or fiction?
Fact. Yeah. Look, you're sitting in Connecticut. What's your temperature? Or 70 degrees, Nate.
And, oh, it's El Nino.
Yeah, and I'm, you know, I'm here in 54, you know, and I've got my North Face parka on, the fireplace burning.
At 54. Yeah. You poor soul. Okay.
Sorry about that, Indianapolis.
Lou, we love you, brother. We wish you all the best. You're an amazing man and an amazing actor. And thank you so much. Can you stay on the line 1 second while we wrap it up?
Of course. Thank you so much. Thanks to all your listeners. Keep tuning in and enjoy all the good and unexplained things in life. Let them wash over you, and don't look for explanations.
That's it. Hook 'em horns.
Hook 'em horns, man.
What do you say we pay the bills, Nathan?
If we have to.
Wow, guys. Right. Lou Temple, The Walking Dead, and so much more. Look for him at the upcoming Rob Zombie new movie, 31. A special thanks to all our homes, all our sponsors, Stitcher Smart Radio, Planet Paranormal, Action Audio Apps. Hey, are you guys listening? Because they want to know, so check them out at actionaudioapps.com. Midnight Syndicate, Creative Commons, thanks for the tunes. From the haunted back roads of America, this has been another exclusive G&D show interview. Don't go changing America. You know we won't. Demon Hunter?
Because we love you.
Night, guys.